Welcome to the Reconnect podcast. We are so excited to have you here.
In this podcast, we are discussing all topics around Tantra, conscious relationship, and sacred sexuality.
We believe every couple is meant to enjoy an amazing sex life, constantly deepening the loving connection, lighthearted playfulness, and passionate ecstasy between each other.
We are Melly and Damien Prem, a married couple, parents, tantra teachers, and relationship coaches.
Our mission is to help couples to reconnect to themselves, each other, and the divine, to live a fulfilling relationship and sexuality, and bring more love and consciousness into the world. Yeah, welcome everybody. I'm very happy and very honored to have Maha with me today. Her official name is Mihaela Pentiuk, and she has been our spiritual teacher for quite a long time now. And not only spiritual teacher, but also emotional coach and medical advisor and for any crisis in life. But in general, she is a medical doctor with specialization on homeopathy, and a yoga therapist, and also a spiritual teacher, as I said. And what I really enjoy is that your holistic view on the things, that it's just, also if I come with a physical illness or something, that it's always like looking also about the emotional issues or the spiritual issue, mental issues, to say, okay, where is it really coming from, and going to the root cause. So that's really amazing how you're working, and I'm very happy to have you here today.
Thank you, Melly. Thank you so much. It is an honor to be invited and to talk, to discuss with you these subjects, to go deeper into these directions. And yes, our subject today is delicate, to say the least, yes. But indeed, it is a subject that is very present. Very few people speak openly mm-hmm. about it. So it is really an honor, to a privilege, an occasion to go into this subject and to talk with you. We have been through a lot together. We know the highs and the valleys, and indeed this holistic approach to health and spirituality and life, it is a real treasure, really valuable, a real value. And I surely hope that everyone is going to get how much plus bonus, plus value it brings to their life individually. So mm-hmm. let's dive in.
Definitely. But first, before we dive into the pain during sex topic, perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about your own journey, or what led you to what you're offering today.
Oh, that's a long story. I had this call for medical studies, but also for self-knowledge. Like, there is something behind. It's not just work. It's not just the studies. There is something more. So I started both of them together with yoga, meditation, medical studies, then medical practice, then specialty. I took a specialization in physical medicine, rehabilitation, and balneoclimatology. Like, yeah, almost nobody knows what a physiatrist is. Everybody says, even translators, official translator, this is very funny, official translators, people who should know English, they all the time translate my medical doctor's name as psychiatrist, because everybody knows what a psychiatrist, a shrink is, but a physiatrist, a doctor that works with the body and with the alternative methods and with the spa methods, because that's the essence of it, for rehabilitation, for long-term work. Wow, that's no. So even starting from the medical specialty, there is a fringe, there is a border, there is a direction towards holistic aspect. And then I developed even more towards holistic therapies, classical homeopathy, yoga therapy, Ayurveda, psychotherapy, and everything that is necessary to put together, you know, in this complex approach towards the mystery that we are, that the human being is, and the health in itself, our condition of health. It's amazing, absolutely fascinating to see how different symptoms come from so many, can be produced from so many causes, root causes, direction, triggers. Yes, and we usually have the tendency to stay in one direction, like, okay, it's diet, or it's toxicity, or it's only the mind, or it's not. No, it's everything, and everyone takes bits and pieces according to their own individuality, and that is fascinating, fascinating to see indeed.
It's so nice to feel your energy and enthusiasm about this topic and still this interest.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's more than 30 years, it's 34 years now that I'm, you know, on this journey, and it has been a lot. There has been a lot of struggles, like really I went through times of internal schisms. Like I was one in the medical environment, at the work, in the hospital. I was thinking in a certain way, I was applying certain treatments, and I was different when I was going and doing my yoga, teaching the yoga, or doing the meditation, making it a retreat, working with the holistic approaches. And it was like, okay, there are two doctors inside and me, and two different ways of approaching and how to put them together at that time. Yeah, to say that stress is the cause of many diseases, it was like blasphemia. And like, now it's common knowledge. Everybody knows like this. Yeah, agrees with that. But at that time, no, actually, it was quite a journey that I am very happy to see now. It's supported by science, it's supported also by the traditional medicine, so somehow things come together, somehow we build some bridges, so that's my hope, that it's going to continue and finally it will become mainstream, what is now alternative, complementary and alternative. I hope it will become mainstream, and also individualized medicine, individualized, personalized, integrative, personalized medicine. This I believe is the future. We have seen during the pandemic time that the emergency medicine was making people in, was forcing certain kind of directions that will be good for all or for the average people. But when it comes to individual needs and individual adaptation, there is no time for the system to work on this. There is no time, no ability, not the resources to really adapt rules and regulations, laws for the individual. So we need to be outside of an emergency situation, health emergency situation, to really put the basis of an individualized medicine, of the one that really looks on how the person, how the human being is approaching a certain disease. Okay, we have a virus, a new virus, and everyone does, there are certain symptoms, but nobody is having the same kind of reaction. Nobody, not even people of the same family, and you have seen it. it's not the same reaction. Yes, there can be patterns, but it's not the same. So that needs still some work. And medical science is going in that direction big time also, with individualized medicines, with the genetic discoveries, with the interference of the epigenetics. So there is promise, there is a big promise, and I'm very, very much looking forward to that. So
and it's great to have doctors like you who bring the two worlds together.
Yeah. Yes, I'm really, really enthusiastic about it.
Oh. Yeah, but let's look at the topic of pain. Perhaps first of all, pain in general. What would you say? What is pain telling us? What can we learn when we listen to the pain? Or, and also, like, what's the difference between pain and suffering? Like, perhaps you can delve a little bit into the topic of pain in general.
Well, nobody wants to look really into the pain because it's painful. Yes. So, pain is a very powerful physiologic mechanism that is designed to call our attention onto something that requires all our efforts. Like, okay, we are running very fast and so on, and then there is a sudden pain in the knee. That sudden pain is there to stop us from inflicting further injury. Yes, you need to stop. Yes, I know you want to go very fast. I know you want to reach the goal. I know you want to run the marathon, but the knee is not able to do it right now. The physical body, your body is not able to do it right now. So then the pain comes and says, stop, pay attention to me. Yes, pay attention to me. That's the basic original design. And it is very powerful, taking all our internal resources and the tension, calling our brain to focus on that painful area and try to find a solution, an immediate solution. So our attention is called and is on to that painful area and is directed towards fixing the problem. Yes, but pain, it is unpleasant. Yes, it is an unpleasant symptom. And the most of us, automatically, we would like to run away from the pain. We don't want to stay with, we avoid the pain. So naturally, we don't want to stay with the pain, but we want to find a solution to fix it. So go directly into the next step. Yes, of this. The problem is that in the process of going towards a solution, we start adding a lot of judgments and a lot of other knowledge. We gather all kind of other knowledge from our experience, from our history, from what we know before, from what we have been told, education, and so on. Like, there is this pain in the knee, and the first thing is, okay, there is a pain, I need to stop. And how to fix it? Yes, how to fix it? I need to fix it because this time I cannot run the marathon. I cannot win the marathon this time. So then what comes up on top of the physical pain of the symptom is a lot of mental emotional processing. This knee, my body didn't betrayed me, could not, I'm not strong enough, I'm not good enough. This time I will need to wait another 1 year for running the marathon, and I did so much training and I couldn't. Why now? Why here? What do I need to do to solve it? You know, find, take a pill, ask for help. So a lot of mental activity, a lot of processing, a lot of energy that is actually invested into that physical symptom. And that energy actually contributes to an aggravation of the symptom itself. Because on the physical pain, we add also our interpretation of it, which might be right, or might be far, far away from the cause, from the real starting point of the pain. Yes, all this judgment about our identity, that I'm not good enough, that the body betrayed me, that why this pain now, or I have to stop, I'm going to be ashamed, other people are going to go forward, you know, my beloved will be disappointed, my family will not support me, I have all this is noise that makes the pain worst. It actually amplifies the character of pain. It amplifies the emergency mood that the pain, original pain, is supposed to inflict to the brain, and does not contribute to the healing. Because this extra stress is setting our immune system, is setting our self-healing mechanisms of the body in a stress position, not in a healing. The healing in itself is an area, is a internal condition of rest and repose, maintenance. Pay attention. If we are constantly in a rush, the levels, the increased levels of cortisol, the internal hormone of stress, are going to suppress the function of the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this extra noise is not supportive for the treatment, for addressing the pain in itself. But this we don't realize and we don't see. And this extra noise is actually the bridge from pain to suffering. The pain is the physiologic call for attention. It is natural. It is our friend. Although we may say, no, no, it's painful, it's an enemy. No, it is, pain is a friend of ours, unpleasant, undesired friend, but nevertheless, a friend, somebody who wants really our good, who wants to call our attention on something that is protecting us. But then all the noise that we put around it actually transforms it into suffering. The interpretation, the perception of pain, plus the interpretation that we give to that pain, is the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And the treatment of the pain is usually quite different than the treatment of suffering. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The treatment of the pain is the domain of the medicine, and of doctors, of therapies, healers, while the treatment of suffering is the domain of the interpretations, values, principles, meaning, purposes, in a word, spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do with this too, and is different. It's different, but they overlap strongly, and they overlap in a situation of emergency, of big emergency. There have been some really brilliant studies performed on meditators when it comes to dealing with pain. And there was an experiment performed on people who were not meditated, never made no experience with meditator, and very advanced meditators. So they all have been put with the hands on a plate. Yes. And they were told that during 10 minutes, in the next 10 minutes, at one point, that plate is going to heat up very shortly, for a very short period of time, short enough to inflict the pain, but not produce an injury. Yes, without producing a burn. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone went into meditation with the palms on that plate, knowing that at one point there will be pain. They are going to experience pain. And then they were looking into what happened in the brain of this, of the participants. In those who did not have experience with meditation, the entire brain shows activity, you know, a lot of activity. When is going to come, you know, it's pain, the expectation, you know, and the brain is completely fire up, wiring up, waiting for it. And then the pain comes, so there is a big inflicting day. Oh, pain, you know? And the pain is for very short for a period of time. So after that, there is a decrease in the mental activity, in the brain's activity. but still persistent. Oh, you know, how bad it was, that pain. What if it comes again? You know, why did I go into this? How should I do? What if I have a scar? What if I have an injury? What happened there? Wow, it was so bad. It was so bad. And the whole 10 minutes is a whole processing. While the advanced meditators, they start with the palms on the same plate. They meditate down line, 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 flat line of meditation, meditation focusing. There is a peak when the pain is perceived. So there is mental activity. The pain is perceived really and that sharp and at its intensity, its proper intensity, sometimes even more than the non-meditator, because there is an increased sensibility. So there is a very high activity in the brain perceiving the pain, and then it comes back to the normality, and there is meditation again. There is a baseline of brain activity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the difference between pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
The pain is only that peak. It's only that peak. All the noise around is the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And the pain needs to be addressed with medical, if it produces an injury or something, needs to be addressed medically. The noise requires personal work, requires meditation, stress management, personal knowledge, control of the mind, focus of the mind, self-investigation, looking into the character of the pain, the expectations, the history, the trauma, all the things that we put on top of.
Mm. Wow, that's really interesting. That's a really nice example of the experiment. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Fascinating indeed. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. how this, and to have it like on paper, on the, you know, EEGs, on the fMRIs, like having the instruments showing clearly,
mm-hmm,
this difference is mind-blowing. Yeah.
But if we talk about pain, when would you say, I mean, what is a healthy way to deal with the pain and find relief? And when does it make sense to take painkillers, or do you say no, not at all? So how do you address this?
So now it depends very much on the character of pain. Yes. Our first reaction is, when it comes to pain, is to avoid it. Yes. To run away from it because it's unpleasant, or to jump into finding a solution to it. Yes. Actually, for healing purposes, it is good to stay with the pain. Yes. This is not a 1 second pain like in the experiment before. Yes. But this is a lasting pain. Yes. It is a symptom already. Yeah. So focusing on the character of pain, like how that pain really feels like in the body. I ask very often, how is your pain? Okay, people come in for consultation. They say, I have a headache. Okay, so how is your pain? Well, it's painful. And okay, and where is your pain? In the head. Yes, I heard it is in the head. But it can be frontal, in the temples, one side, both sides, on the vertex, behind. It comes from front to back, from back to front, from one area to another. And then it can be perceived as a stabbing, as a needle, or as a cramping, or as a pressure from inside out, from outside in. You know, it is numbness, it is a neural pain, a nervous kind of pain, or it is actually cramping, which is a different form of pain. It is a pain produced by the affliction of the nerves, or by certain problems of the vascular system, or it is produced by the eyes, by the function, or it can be produced by an injury. So the pain is so complex. and jumping directly into the fixing it, take a painkiller. Yes, I have a pain, take a painkiller. It takes away this ability to investigate the pain and then find the first solutions. Find the starting point for a good actual solution, because it is one thing to have a nervous pain and another kind of treatment that is necessary in a cardiovascular incident. Yes, or something else, if it is an injury or it is just a scratch, if it is a skin issue or it is an injury of the bones or of the brain or of the eyes, or if there is congestion of the sinuses. Yes, the headache is produced by congestion of the sinuses or by certain problems of the brain membranes. The treatments are completely different, and the headache, the pain in itself is going to have different characters. Instinctually, we want to avoid that pain, so we immediately jump towards something that is going to take the pain. But the painkillers are non-specific. Yes, they cut the connection between the receptors for pain and the processing part in the brain, the processing of pain in the brain. It is like, okay, in the old days when an incident was reported by somebody who was running, like the first marathon runner, you know, who was running in order to give a certain news, to send a certain news, you know. And in this case, if we give a painkiller, it's like killing the messenger. Did we solve the problem? Not at all. We actually even postponed our ability to find the solution, you know. We are not informed any longer. Yes. So jumping into a painkiller, into taking a painkiller at the first simple, most easy pain, it's not a smart move. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other side, with pain that is longer lasting, yes, not taking a painkiller is also not a good idea. Mm-hmm. Because a long lasting pain can become an agent of disease, of pathology, of aggravation in itself. So when there is an area of toxicity or injury or an irritation in a certain part of the body and is constantly painful, constantly sending pains, and especially when this kind of pains are non-specific, they move, they change, and they change their character, then what happens is the brain is constantly stimulated to pay in a condition of emergency to pay attention to this pain. And then the sensory areas in the brain concerning pain processing are going to develop every time neurons that fire together, wire together. So in a way, that painful area or that pain processing area is going to grow with long-term pain. And in this way, the every kind of pain, a different pain produced by maybe a signal that is not usually painful, like a touch, you know, like a simple touch, is going to be projected in that overwhelmed, in that grown area of processing the pain in the brain. And there, because of being processed in a sensitive area and already in a widespread area, is going to be interpreted as pain, although it is not a pain. It is a touch sensation. It is very often, this is already the process that stays at the basis of the chronic pain syndromes. So with chronic pain sufferers, their problem is physical, is in the body, but it is also in the brain, in the way the brain is used to trigger or to react to pain. Both needs to be addressed. In this case, it is better to take a painkiller. If there is no practical solution, if there is no easy way of reducing the pain, of addressing that pain, long-term pain can lead to this chronic pain syndrome. And we need to avoid that. So taking a painkiller in this case is important. It's important, yes. So things are adapted. We need to look into the character of pain and also in the one who is in front. Yeah. So in the individual who has the pain. I was working with a lot of yogis and yoginis, and I know I was working with women with menstrual pains and who are very much into this healthy living, no medication, and they wanted to solve their problems by themselves with their own practice and so on. And I was recommending in this case, look, once you know what's wrong, take a painkiller, for example, during the menstrual pain. No, it is not in the natural, in their morals and ethics. And they suffer for a long period of time. And I remember now actually one case of a lady who after some time she just realized, okay, maybe I need to take a pain to listen what I was saying. She took a painkiller and she wrote me like years after I told her, wow, it's so good. And actually I was freed of my pain and I was able to take a better decision after that. So it is very important to individualize the recommendation of a painkiller. It is very important what kind of interpretation and additions we put on the pain. It's not just the pain, especially the interpretation of what we put on that pain is very important to address.
Okay. And if we look now more specifically into the topic of pain during sex, what would you say, what are the most common reasons for it? Or
so there are, in general, there are four main reasons, four main categories of causations for pain during sex. It is the injury, the possibility of an injury, the possibility of an inflammation, yeah, the possibility of certain internal processing like disease, a certain kind of disease, and there is a psychosomatic, psychological reason. Yes. So with pain during sex, we have even a more complex subject because this sexuality, intimacy, production in itself, they are areas that involve very much aspects that of identity, of manifestation, very delicate aspects of relationships, of finding ourselves vulnerable in front of somebody else, of expectations. And yes, they involve facing a lot the subject of shame and guilt. And I know a lot of people, and there are actually a lot of studies that show that the pains in this area, in these domains, are actually not reported. It is estimated that less than 50% of such cases of pain during intimacy or related with around intimacy, around sexual, are actually reported or taken into account. And this is precisely because of the intimate aspects and the shame that is related, and also the projections that this subject is has. And they are not reported to, this is what is estimated as not reported to the mainstream medical environment, but there are also, there is no report towards, or even admission toward oneself or towards the partner. As there are a lot of connections with different intimate relationship aspects, fears, expectations, hopes, and this subject is part of the psychology of it, but it is also very, very much a physical level. So most of the pains that are reported are related with infection or injury, yes, actual injury, yeah, because this, it's obvious, it's more obvious that can be adopted, but even this ones, especially with injuries, they will not be even taken into account. And here I mention this very often because I have seen reaction pain, a lot of pains in during sex, during intimacy, even when it comes to intimate touch, yes, a lot of pain coming up due to a certain traumatic shock accumulated in the body. Actually, there is I remember here, I'll give a case, the case that was most relevant, one of the many years ago. I was working with a couple, and they were married, and she had a lot of pains during sex. And I asked, okay, how was your history? And they had the beautiful history of every couple in love. They were very much in love, very passionate one with each other. They had an excellent sexual relationship in the beginning. And then at one point, she said, he started to be very aggressive. He started to be more violent during sexuality, and I started closing down and feeling not. And then I was like, okay, what happened at that time? It turns out that actually she had a serious ski injury, a ski accident at the same time, a ski accident that left an imprint of physical trauma. I have seen cases, and I know in Materia Medica mentioned this, like aversion to penetration. It's written in the Materia Medica Homeopathica, for example, in women post physical injury. And this is not sexual abuse. This is not sexual trauma. This is has nothing to do with the sexual trauma. Her trauma actually was somewhere in the area of the legs, not in the genital area. Yes, but the body in itself gathered the memory of physical trauma in her entire being, her entire perception of touch, all touch sensation was shifted to a higher level of sensitivity. And she was more sensitive to touch and averse to touch in general. Like her first reaction to touch, to any kind of touch, even embrace, a hug, a simple hug of a friend, the first reaction of the body was like, no, go away. But it was so subtle, she didn't really notice that, that thing, that shift. She didn't really notice it. And then it manifested even strongly when it came to the intimate area, to the sexual manifest, And then due to this increased sensitivity to touch, she will perceive, she will feel that the sexuality as it used to be before became now violent. And this was a shift in the perception of touch, in the internal sensitivity to touch, of a physical memory, physical body memory. And it goes, I have seen cases in such with such as, and it goes towards the development of vaginismus, this spasming, cramping that even prevents penetration, prevents the actual sexual act. And it is not related to a sexual trauma. If there is a sexual trauma, and then even more, this can be. But still, it needs to be addressed. So that physical trauma needs to be addressed. Yes, and addressed in the body and the brain. Yes, because it is a bodily memory. So it's not just a memory in the mind. Yeah, actually, in the case that I was presenting, only by calling the attention on this coincidence between the physical trauma and the shift, the change in their sexual dynamic, was extremely relevant for both of them. And going through the trauma treatment and going through the whole process in itself, they were actually able to return to a normal intimacy, physical intimacy. Yeah. So there are many, many such situations. There are also the shifts in the hormonal shifts, like women during their menstrual cycle or during their reproductive life, they will encounter different shifts of hormonal levels in the body, and then their lubrication, the quality of the tissue in the reproductive organs is going to change. So then the sensitivity is going to increase. Yes. So I also noticed that there is almost 80% of the women that I talked with, they encounter after pregnancy, after childbearing and childbirth, they encounter a certain problem in returning to a normal sexuality. Yeah. And this is related with a difficulty of the body to return to a certain normal hormonal dynamic, a dynamic, not hormonal levels, because the levels of hormones might be the same when taken at one time. Yes, but the dynamic, that fine dynamic, is the one that is going to support such processing. And a lot of women, then they will have a rejection, they will experience a rejection towards sexuality or sexual encounter, and immediately after birth, and then the relationship suffers, and yeah, and those again are things that are related with our problems of the physiology, of the physiopathology. They need to be addressed medically, healing way, and also in a holistic way. Yes, in a holistic way, because it's a whole connection between the mind and the body, the memory, the interpretation, and the pain themselves.
Okay, so quite complex, right?
Quite complex.
Because, I mean, also childbirth for a lot of women I talk to, it is also a traumatic event, often, especially in modern hospitals and different doctors like examining you and your, and this might also be stuck somewhere in the system, or also because you were talking about physical and sexual trauma, but also just normal emotional trauma or suppressed emotion can also have an effect, right?
Yes. I did not go there yet. Staying with the embodied symptomatologies, the ones that sometimes we don't realize that are there, but then the emotional and also the even the spiritual aspects are very important into that, you know. So the psychological aspects are very important. There are women who, again, a study I will refer to a famous study of women who were watching horror movies, and there were sensors in the pelvic floor, and they were noticing very strong contraction, tensing of the pelvic floor, imperceivable to the normal mind, only by watching a movie, a horror movie. Imagine what happens to the whole body and to this area, intimate area, when we are in an actual life situation with the same kind of effects, with a fear, a strong fear, and angst, conflict, you know, humiliation, mischief, everything, traumatic events, bad news, pandemic, you know, all this. So everything. It was known, and I think it was in Germany when women during the occupation times, their menstruation went away. They stopped menstruating. They stopped being fertile, having children, because of the level of stress. So there is a very close connection, very, very close connection. Now there are studies that have been performed in the psychology, psychotherapy domains with relationship dynamics and the ability to, and perception of pain, and the ability to also reach orgasm, to have pleasure, because yes, there are couples who start passionately, like all couples, yes, start passionately and beautifully, and at one point everyone goes into the nitty-gritty connection of, you know, problems. I want this, you want that, I am this, I am right, who's in charge, who does this, who does that, you know. And all those start reflecting on the quality of the intimacy, and they are reflected in the quality of the tension of the pelvic floor. They are reflected in the quality, in the dynamic of the hormone production and secretion. They are reflected into the ability to open up emotionally for intimacy. So the problem is very complex on many levels, So then a discussion and the conflict, even a underlying conflict, not even open or admitted, is going to be reflected on the sexuality. So every time somebody comes with a certain problem with pain in this domain, it needs to be carefully assessed on all this direction and openly assessed and investigated with sincerity and with no judgment. Because the moment the judgment comes up in morality, good or bad, in that moment, the possibility to heal it, to really go to the root cause, or to address the deep aspects of the problem is locked. And is locked for the therapist, and is locked also for the patient.
And it's so sad because I often hear that people go to a normal gynecologist or whatever they to get the exam if there are bacteria or whatever, and then it's like, nope, no problem.
No
It's
problem.
your
It is.
imagination, and you're sent back home. And it's like,
Yes,
that so
go.
many people do not really feel seen. Although this is already such a vulnerable act to go and ask for support in this aspect, and
Yes.
then often you don't receive any support,
Yeah.
with in the normal system. I
Yeah.
don't know.
Yes, correct. Yes, and not only that, it not. I have seen it firsthand, you know, in my personal experience and in the experience of my patient, judgment and even scolding, like coming out of the clinic of a consultation, crying because of being told directly you're stupid, you know, or you made bad choices, or how did you get this kind of problem, or something like this, like with open judgment, which is extremely, extremely painful. And it makes it completely closes all the opportunities to heal. Yes, that's the traditional, that's the traditional setting. Fortunately, now a lot of changes is happening also in the medical environment, Western medical environments. So there is more admission of what of this problem. But yes, we have to say, indeed, that is vulnerable, extremely vulnerable in any kind, even a small micro expression is going to influence and is going to aggravate that situation. Yes, it's true. So I personally, I always recommend this kind of problems to be addressed in a holistic way, in an integrative way, from different perspective, have a second opinion, look into it. Yes, and
So, how do
first
you approach it if somebody comes to you with those symptoms? Like, what would be a way how to approach it holistically? Or is it necessary to do like most mainly very expensive hormonal testing, or is it important to look at your psychological issues, or where what is your approach? What kind of questions do you ask, or how do you get to the root cause?
My approach is first to investigate the problem, the complaint thoroughly from all directions. Because all of us, we have biases. Like everybody has one. Some people are more focused on the pathology, on the medical aspects, on the healing. Now there should be something hormonal, and they go on, or something. Very often there are people who are convinced that it's only the diet, so they change diets and go into diets. And like, yeah, I had several people who will come and say, my problem is thrush. I have thrush for a long time, and I did so many diets, and as soon as I stop doing the diet, it comes back, you know. So, well, that is a sign that diet is not the answer. So that is a sign that you jump directly into the conclusion. Yes, we need to come back to step one, understand the problem. Okay, so what are the complaints? Oh, thrush. You know, thrush is candida. Candida, you know candida. While I know candida, I want to know what you mean by candida. What are your symptoms, the way you approach candida? Yes. So the put a saying, my problem is thrush, or my saying is candida, it's already jumping to the diagnostic. We need to come back to the symptoms. So they said, so what is the problem? That there is pain during sex, that there is a certain kind of discharge, and that discharge is shameful, so I wash, I do all kind of things. No, stop washing, stop doing. Fine. What is the character of that discharge? How is it naturally? You know, how it comes? How is the pain? When does the pain come? No, investigate clearly. Know your body. know those symptoms, yes, know the complaint, gather all the information on the symptoms, like good bedside manner anamnesis, yes, is in the old days when the doctor came and will ask all the questions in the past, yes, and the smell and the patterns, when does it come? Is it when you lie down or when you stand up or when you run? Or, you know, it's amazing. It's immediately after menstruation, is before, is connected with the sexual desire, it is not. Like I ask all these questions, and only very few women can say this, oh, this is a good question, but I don't know, I never thought about it. Well, it's important. It is important. And how is the menstrual pattern? Do you actually take a note? When is your sexual desire? If this discharge or this pain comes together with the sexual desire, an increase of sexual desire, then it is more likely to be connected with hormonal issues and so on. There are all these details. So let's look into the character of pain, the patterns around it, the responses to different applications, like if I have stress, there is more. If not, what kind of stress? If I eat certain things, maybe not. So notice all this aspect, yeah? Notice all this aspect, gather all the information, logical, medical, symptomatology, yes, and then investigate the mind-body connection, because that is essential as well. Like, what do you believe about it? How does it feel like? How does it feel like? Because very often people will start coming with things that they don't dare to say, you know. Very often I have this thing, you know, this I would not say to a normal doctor, you know, because it sounds crazy. Yeah, like somebody, men and women, they were telling me, you know, it feels like there is something alive down there in the lower abdomen, you know, it's something moving there. And then women might say, you know, it feels like I'm pregnant, but I'm not, you know, or there is something alive into this, or there is a parasite, you know, the mind that comes up with this. So this kind of irrational or semi-rational, but this internal perceptions, they are the way that the mind interferes with the body. The autonomic nervous system is the part of our nervous system that is in closer control, closer connection with our physiology, with the organs, with our internal processing. It's not the logic. It's actually more the emotions, the sensations, the perceptions. I cannot stop my heart with the mind, you know. Okay, now I want to commit suicide, stop the heart and that's it, you know, bye. No, we cannot. But when it comes to emotions, we say such things. I got so afraid, my heart stopped. You know, I was frozen. Or I saw my beloved and my heart started beating faster, you know, or something. You know, the emotion shifts, you know. My heart skipped a bit when he kissed me, you know. Well, that is the influence of the emotions via the autonomic nervous system. So then we need to investigate that part, because that one is running the show. And for this part of the investigation, it's very important to say exactly what you are ashamed of saying. Hmm. Recently, somebody told me, like yesterday, somebody was telling me, you know, I feel like my tongue is very hot. I wouldn't dare to say that such a thing to a doctor. Well, that exact symptom was absolutely relevant, was most important to decide in what direction the body needs help. How it needs help, what kind of remedy it needs, and what kind, like it make the shift, this kind of rare, strange, and peculiar things that you don't dare to say, don't dare to say it to a normal doctor. They will say I'm crazy. But they influence. They come in the dreams. You know, they come in the dream. Watch a horror movie and then remain with the image there, and then the cramping is constant there at the memory. Yeah. So why does that stay with you? Yeah. So we need to investigate both the medical aspect, both the physical, the logic part, and also the emotional, the psychosomatic connection. Put them together and see what is essential. What is the priority? What is the priority? What is the first thing that the body needs help with?
Mm-hmm.
And go in the direction that the body wants to go, because the body has an innate intelligence. An innate intelligence of healing itself. The body has it is programmed, it is designed to survive, to find the best solution, like a cybernetic mechanism to survive, yeah? To take the best decision to survive. Yeah? So then, we go with the body, not against it. Oh, I have this thrush. Please give me something to stop it so that I can have a date tomorrow. I have a hot date tomorrow. No, sorry. The body produces that thrush, that discharge with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have a date tomorrow? Okay, but it is against what your body wants.
Mm-hmm.
So then we negotiate. Yes, we negotiate. And that is where the complication comes. But still, after we listen to the body, then the body responds and adapts. We gain what is called a better adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we don't need to just fix everything. The body adapts much better.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and goes into a certain flow. We restore the inner self-healing power inside the body, and that is indeed a good purpose, a direction to really consider,
mm-hmm.
where the empowerment indeed happens.
Mm-hmm. And to also get to lasting change, that is not just
correct
for correct. The date, that's but correct. Perhaps for
yes,
long.
That is the lasting change. That is the lasting change indeed.
Mm. Wow, thank you very much for all your wisdom that you shared with us. So
a pleasure.
If somebody now is interested and say, yeah, that's exactly what I'm searching for, somebody who's really listening, who is really digging deep and getting to the root cause, so what do you offer? What kind of consultations or possibilities are there to work with you or to get in contact with you?
I offer online consultations, and mm-hmm. In these consultations we do this kind of explorations that are there if it is necessary, if I see, because this is something I you asked about before, if it is necessary we go into hormonal testing, we go into medical testing, into more expensive, extensive testing, especially if from this investigation, online investigation, comes up the need to go deeper, deeper, or to look for what is called an obstacle for cure, then we ask for more. So very often I ask people to go and do certain investigations that are necessary. And,
mm-hmm.
To see that, or we need to address some aspects from the environment. Again, recently there was a lot of cases and situations with people who are suffering from mold, and regardless of how much treatment and healthy lifestyle they will have, if they are living in an area that is has a high level of toxicity and intolerance, or producers and intolerance, or even allergic reactions, then the body is overwhelmed. The power of the self-healing powers of the body are overwhelmed. So sometimes it requires lifestyle changes. Yes. So the practice, my practice, is integrative, personalized. So it has is individually centered. The needs of the body, the needs of the self-healing mechanisms are the priority. Yes. And as I said before, this priorities of the self-healing mechanisms might not be the priorities of the mind, of the personality, of the time in life. Yes, there are women who want to have a child right now, but the body has other things to deal with first, other priorities. So then we need to find the best solutions from both directions. So I do online consultations. I do also recommendations of lifestyle, of exercising, of nutrition, of psychotherapy. I work with the mind and the body. And I also make a lot of referrals, because there are the needs of this holistic healing are not just in one direction. Yes, some people need adjustments, some need people need rest, others need more exercising. Yes, it need more dietary investigations. So I have this experience very much in working with spiritual circles, with people on a spiritual path, or with existential concerns, people who are very, for whom meaning, purpose, spiritual practice, meditation, yoga are essential. And this is, again, this is a domain that is really relevant, because during certain stages of personal development, we reach some breakthroughs moments, but we also reach some blockages. There are mistakes, there is healing, a healing need, a healing priority, and then a spiritual priority, or healing blockages that do not allow development in a certain area of spiritual practice. So that is also an integration, and a very important one, one that is not addressed in the medical settings, in the normal mm-hmm. medical settings.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there is more and more admittance that such a thing is important, and there is work contribution between hospitals and priests, chaplains, churches. So, but there are people who are not involved, and more there are people nowadays who do not declare themselves religious, but they are spiritual and do not belong to one domain, one path or another. They will still have experience. They will still experience this kind of connections, interferences
mm-hmm.
between their health and their practices, their physical, the pathology, and the beliefs or the purposes.
Yeah, especially also when it comes to sex, I also see so much still our beliefs from Christian upbringing or whatever that influence the shame or how we relate to sexuality, and can have a huge impact also on desire and the way that people perceive sex, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm working actually with couples like where one was grown up as a really in a Christian environment, very, very much on Christian values, and now they want to build a tantric relationship, a tantric sexuality, and with all sincerity, in all sincerity and respect for their original values and for the values of the practice in itself. And then it's amazing how they come up, especially with tantric sexuality, that brings up the subject of Kundalini arising, very big energies. So when you put a certain kind of belief, a certain kind of emotion together with this powerful energy, it's like, whoa, it can bring quite a lot of explosion. Yeah, so it is good. As the tradition says, first prepare the body and the mind, prepare the instrument, and then use it for very high refined practices. Yes, then use it, because else this kind of bypasses, yes, in certain cases work amazingly, but in certain cases can bring problems.
Yeah, well, I'm very, very grateful for all the wisdom you shared with us. Thank you very much. And I think it's so important to have this holistic approach and to really get to the root cause and integrate all our being, because we're not just one tiny piece, not just the body or not just our emotions, but how it's all integrated. So it's really amazing the work that you're doing. And thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to present it and to spread this. There are many doctors and many holistic therapies going into the same direction. And the more people are listening, the more people are awakening in that direction, the better it will be. And also it is going to be integrated in the system, the mainstream system. And there is momentum. We are building a momentum. So I truly wish that this is one piece, at least one powerful piece in building that momentum of change in ourselves, in those who listen, in those who belong to them, who are going to influence by them.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you very much, Maha.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the episode today. If you liked it, make sure you share it with your partner or any friend you may think this is valuable for. If you want to dig deeper into Tantra and really experience the magic it can bring into your relationship, you can go to our website reconnectprem.com and download our 3 Tantra practices for deeper connection. You will also find the link in the show notes. And if you enjoy the podcast, we are super grateful if you subscribe to the show and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Thank you so much. We wish you all the best, Melly and Damien. And always remember to reconnect to yourself, reconnect to your partner, reconnect to love.